Have you ever thought your community could be a better place to live? Do you live in a place where you used to know everyone and felt at home there? My guest today has been helping communities find themselves and help them build that sense of togetherness and familiarity. It can be done, but it takes will and effort. In our world of centralizing power, this seems the necessary response to that. Build local better. The Culinary Libertarian Podcast, episode 194.
Welcome to the Culinary Libertarian Podcast, where the philosophy is free, but the food is on you.
Culinary Libertarian, welcome back to the podcast. Happy to have you here. Happy to be here. My guest today is Barry Braun. Barry has been an officer in the Canadian Navy, started four businesses, and is the author of four books, including Build a Legacy That Matters and Reshaping Communities. Barry has used his background of business, marketing, and coaching to develop innovative processes for changing the culture of a community. These processes have been recognized by institutions and governments around the world as out of the box, effective, and setting new standards. They have been able to take those processes to communities on four continents. Hello, Barry. Thank you for joining me today on the Culinary Libertarian Podcast.
Thank you, Dan, for having me here today. Looking forward to the conversation.
Well, I think it's going to be interesting, and I haven't really pursued this idea. And listeners saying, "What idea? What idea?" We're going to talk about voluntary community. Before we get into that, give us a little bit of background about you, and you've been doing this a while. How did you get into this?
Well, my career was entrepreneurial coaching, particularly cultural change and building social purpose as a competitive advantage. So that's where my background for this. But about 10 years ago, I became a grandfather. And when I became a grandfather, I was reflecting on my grandchildren's future. And I really didn't like what I was imagining there. So I decided that I was going to commit the rest of my skill and life to seeing what I could do to mitigate that so that they can find the support they're going to need as they go on with their lives.
Okay. So you have a business. Is it a business?
Well, I don't know if you could call it a business. Okay. So I used to have a business and I was very successful at it. But since I've started Happy Community Builders and Happy Community Project, it's been more a work of passion and commitment than it is what you would call a real business.
So certainly, I think we'd call it a labor of love.
Yes, and businesses are supposed to be labors of profit.
Well, there's nothing wrong with profit.
I haven't seen that very much yet.
Well, maybe it's coming. All right, so the thing that caught me, so you and I share, we use a thing called PodMatch, and I've talked about that on the show before, is a useful tool for a podcast guests and hosts to find each other, and so it worked. So you wrote about making a community. I said, well, this is interesting. And I listened to you on a different dog you're playing. I listened to you discussing community on another fellow's podcast. It was something on Audible.
Okay.
Before we get really into this, I guess let's start getting into this. Can we define what is a community? Can a community be one?
Well, in our modern world, we have all kinds of definitions of community, but I think the real definition, as far as I'm concerned, is when you can walk down the street and recognize the people who live around you, then you're in a community. And if you can't do that, you're just living in a place. So in ancient times, way back when, we used to depend on community, tribe, to for our everything. We depended on each other for our happiness, for our well-being, for our economy, everything. And it's only been in very recent times, like about 40 years ago, where we started letting go of the idea that community was a quaint old idea and that really self-reliance was what we really ought to be striving for. And I think we've been learning that's not necessary. I hope we've been learning anyway. That's not necessarily a good strategy, that we are interdependent. We do need each other, and it's helpful to need each other with the people who live around us. So community is places where I know people, where I feel I belong, and I know that somebody else, other people, care about me. That's community.
I like that. I think that's a good, partly definition, but I think also explanation of what it sort of sets what it is and also sets an expectation.
Yeah.
You think a community can have a sense of purpose?
Oh, well, if it doesn't, it's kind of lost. There needs to be a unifying story for the community. We are, and then you fill them in the blank. So we are a place where we look after each other. We care about each other. We are a place where we are the best at salmon fishing or whatever it might be, right? But yes, there is some common story that links us all together. That doesn't mean we all aren't individuals and have our own other agendas in life, but we all subscribe to the common story. This applies to more than community. It actually applies to countries. And I think one of the things that's going on in the United States right now, from what I can tell, is the United States has lost its unifying story and has made up a whole bunch of competing stories, which is causing all kinds of political conflict in the States. That's an outside observer's perspective on what's going on there.
Well, you're not wholly wrong, but that's an entire that's dozens of shows and probably somebody else's show, and actually it is somebody else's show, but I'm not going to plug in now. But
my point is, the power of story is incredibly important to us as humans. We behave according to the story that we live by. We have our own personal story, and we live to fulfill that personal story, but we also live in a community story, and we act according to that community story. And so that community story does have a purpose, a purpose of unifying us together for some cause or reason.
So If I can restate that, it sounds like there's at least a dual sense of purpose. One, the individual has a sense of purpose to himself and then to his immediate family, the people in the house.
Yep.
But also a sense to the community. But the community, as a single unit of made up of, is a composite of the individuals, is sort of a gestalt thing where it is greater than some of its parts. Does that sound right?
That's true. We still all have our individual stories, but if we don't have a community story that unites us, then we don't really have a community. We just have a place to live. So I've heard of places, and this isn't actually that unusual. When I ask people to tell me about their community, what they say was, well, we have a shopping center down the road, the doctor's not far away, everything I need is nearby, until they run into trouble.
You're not wrong about the problems of America, but I don't want to really get into that, but I can think of one group of people in various different communities who I think for whom this explanation fits perfectly, and that's the Amish. You ask them, what is the purpose of a community? They could tell you. They
absolutely
know.
Absolutely.
I think there are maybe sections in big cities, and I'm thinking particularly about Brooklyn, where the Orthodox Jews and more the Hasidic Jews, whatever your opinion is about them, I think that it could very easily be said, if you ask them, what is your sense of community, they can tell you.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, my personal experience, we've gone through communities around the world, helping them become happier communities. And one of the things that I've noticed is I can talk to around a dozen people in a community and say, tell me about your community. What's it like here? What do you think about it? And after about a dozen people, I'll start recognizing the common language that they talk about it, whether it's a unifying kind of language or a divisiveness kind of language. They will have a story about their community, and it will be a common story that is shared by most people. One of the things that we're very good at is actually being able to help communities change their story. So that it becomes a different story than what is, and then people act according to that new story. So you don't have to be an Amish or a Jewish person in Brooklyn to have a community story. You can be in, I don't know, I forget the names of the towns in, Oregon, but you can be where you, whatever community you live in, and walk down the street and ask people, what do you think about our community where we live? And they'll have a story about it. And that story will be helpful to be unifying as a community, or it'll be divisive and not helpful to being a community.
Yeah, I think I probably could get it. Based on the town, various town social media groups, there's a lot of frustration in town, in this town, over there's a fairly decent drug problem, and there's a fairly decent crime problem. And I don't know if it's the nature of humans to want to focus on the negative instead of the positive, but I hear a lot more about the bad things than I hear about the good things.
And that people behave according to that. If the town's story is that there's a big drug problem, a lot of crime problem, and they're walking down the street and somebody says hello to them, you may look skeptical at them. You may, what do they want from me? Versus a different community where everybody is supportive of each other. And it's, wow, great to meet you. Haven't seen you before, but love to get to know you. The story makes a big difference.
It's an interesting observation about a first reaction. The first reaction being, what do you want from me? As opposed to, how can I help you?
Yeah.
Wow. That's powerful.
So that's partly a personal story, but I think the more powerful story in a community is the community story itself. So one of the things that we focus on is enabling community developers to help shift the stories of their communities so that they are more helpful. The volunteers that you were talking about earlier, the helpers to the community, community helpers, community developers, they all care very deeply about their community, but most of them find themselves swimming uphill, or many of them find themselves swimming uphill against the stream that the cultural system is creating the problems that they're trying to fix, that everybody is hoping that they can, but it becomes almost impossible because the cultural stream is flowing against them.
So I think that's a right, as broad strokes go, I think that's a right observation. So one of the first questions is, how do you change culture?
Well, we have a very simple formula. It's really easy and it's really hard. Right.
It sounds like a lot. There's effort involved here, and I think
there is effort and there's patience that's required. But the process is very easy. You start with a new story, a story of possibility. We could have a new story here. We could behave. We could think of ourselves differently than we do now. And then you give people an experience that shows that that's actually really possible. And then you tell them the story again and again and again, and you give them the experience again and again and again on a weekly basis, on a daily basis, at least on a monthly basis. And after a year, the story shifts. All of a sudden, the community starts talking about themselves differently, and nobody really knows why. But it's because they've been hearing and telling the same story over and over again, and then validating that story with real experience. And then they shift their story. And shifting the story isn't the cultural change, it's the evidence that the culture has changed.
You know, a couple of things that stood out to me on the thing I read on the Podmatch page was you achieve these successes without government involvement. And I thought, yep. Well, now this is impressive. I think it's an easy thing to say, and it's unfalsifiable that a lot of times regulations almost are competing regulations. So you're trying to do something, and no matter what you do, you have a regulation in the way of you doing it, or you have to pay for the fact that you want to do it. And
absolutely. Governments have turned us into consumers of government services, and in many ways have made it illegal for us to do things independently, or at least are discouraged from doing things independently. But a real community is where we do things ourselves. It's up to us. There's nobody else. We're going to do it. And that's kind of the foundational attitude that's required. And so they find their ways around and through the regulations and the rules. So I'll give you a couple of examples of things that we've done. A community of 15,000 people initiated 12 new projects that brought people together in different ways across the generations. They were all intergenerational projects. And the story shifted from, in the beginning, we're so divisive here, nothing ever happens here. If somebody has a good idea, we'll just beat it to death until nothing happens. And they lived that way, and nothing happened there. And they were true. Businesses were moving out. The town was starting to look dodgy or stodgy or something. And they were fulfilling their story. When we were done, there were 750 new volunteers that had shown up. None of those, I shouldn't say none, but there was very, very, very little. Most of the projects, of those 12 projects, had no government funding whatsoever. And the other ones that did had very minimal government funding. And in the end, their story changed to, wow, what a great place to live. Look at all the new people moving in. Look at all the energy here. Look at all the businesses coming in here. There's so much happening here. What a wonderful place to live. That happened in 18 months. Another story, it's a much smaller community. It's only 450 people. There was somebody in the community who decided they wanted to make sure there was a place for youth to be involved in the community. And after a little bit of guidance, they decided to build a community park, a 3/4-acre community park. So the first thing that happened was somebody donated the land for the park, and 200 of the 450 citizens that lived there contributed to the park in one way or another, either with money, with elbow grease, with materials like flowers or gravel, with expertise like carpentry for building benches or, right. Or whatever they needed. And after 3 months, they had a beautiful park that's now hosting weddings on a regular basis, and kids have places to do things there, and it's a regular place where the citizens come to hang out. They're now building a gazebo there so that the local musicians can come out and entertain them on sunny days.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So that's what's possible. And the more that it's dependent upon government, we should have a something or another, and let's get the government to give it to us. Well, the more that that happens, all it is another government service that we're consuming, and we don't really care about it that much. We might use it a little bit, but it's not really ours. And there's a very different flavor to it than when a community goes out and makes it all happen for themselves.
In the U.S. and probably even in Canada, there's a glaring example of what happens when there's simply too much government. And if you're playing at home, you say, "Oh, yeah, Detroit is a shining example of things that can go wrong in the worst possible way." And so Detroit's important to me because I was born in downtown Detroit.
Okay.
Lots of my family, my extended family, my cousins never left. They still live in the greater Detroit area. There was a time when, it's a joke, you wouldn't be caught dead. You would be dead in downtown Detroit. Now, there are parts of subdivisions that are still really, really bad. But the people are, I don't know exactly all the details, but they're working hard to fix this problem. And downtown is becoming, it's coming back. And my cousins show me pictures. We went downtown. Look at this amazing place. And Detroit has some spectacular architecture. There's a lot of things worth saving.
Absolutely. I've read a little bit about the Detroit example. In fact, some of it has been inspiring to me. And where it got its starts is neighborhoods deciding that they wanted a different thing going on in their neighborhood. They didn't want it crime-ridden and falling apart. And so they started cleaning up empty lots and making things look good. And that is the community itself doing it. It wasn't, from my understanding, initiated by the government, at least not in the beginning.
So that's a good, it seems an example of both the worst and the best of what can happen when individuals on a block, and let's just, and it can be really as small as that. Your city block, if you live in a city, if you live in the country, it's a different thing. But get the people together on the city block and you say, we're going to do something.
Yep.
And we're going to make this look nice. We're going to make it a place where we're happy and proud and say, look what we did. And that's, You mentioned, so I think the town, go ahead and say the name of the town, unless you don't want people moving there and it gets too big. Where was the town that had the 12 examples?
Windsor, Nova Scotia. Okay.
You mentioned it being 15,000 people. Yep. Is there a point where a community gets to be too big
and to be a community?
Entropy sets in?
Yes. There is, but that doesn't mean there can't be communities that are part of something bigger. So my experience is that the closer you get to 20,000 people, the less that it is a community, because as you cross that threshold, so 5,000 or 6,000 people, 500 people, 10,000 people, those are all easy places where you do know or recognize most of the people around you. But once you start crossing about the $20,000 or 20,000 people mark, then most people start becoming strangers to you. And so the difference between a city and a community is just that. If you walk downtown Seattle or New York or someplace, you don't recognize anybody. It's not a community. But there are, if you lived there and there's areas of that, neighborhoods of that, you can recognize, you can make it so that if you don't now, you can make it so that you can recognize most people in the neighborhood, and then it becomes a community. So it doesn't have to be rural. It can be a subset of a larger community, but the key element in there, what makes a community is that we know each other, and from knowing each other, we can develop the story of sense of belonging together around this common, whatever it is. And out of all of that comes we care about each other. And we're much more likely to take care of people who we know than strangers, and we know about each other. And so we can have greater confidence that we're there for each other. So that can happen in a city, and can happen in the country. We've worked in Kolkata, India, and it worked there. That's a pretty big place.
Yeah, I think that that's right. And my own, it doesn't fit completely, but it does work. When I lived in Brooklyn, I lived in a neighborhood called Carroll Gardens. And you just go down the Brooklyn Bridge and go down 27 blocks, there's Carroll Gardens. And it's an Italian neighborhood, and there were men's clubs, and I'm not Italian, so I didn't go in them, but I shopped the neighborhood. Some of the best pizza I ever had was across the street, the grocery store, Silla Maria, so I traded in those few blocks, and I knew, because it's an Italian neighborhood, that even at 3 o'clock in the morning, in one of those brownstones, somebody is acting as security watching the street. Yep. And I actually saw somebody, it's a terrible story, but it happened. She was literally held by the collar, kicked in the rear end until she was kicked across the street, and then she was left alone. This is the end of the neighborhood. You don't belong here. You get out. And I was like, what are you doing? You know better than this. You know better than this. What are you doing here? But that's not the good side of the community. But it's a community, and good, bad, or indifferent.
That is still one of the natures of the community. We are looking out for each other, and I'm not advocating that way, kind of looking out for each other, but that's really what's going on there, is we're looking out for each other. And you mentioned earlier in your community that that drug and crime is a problem. Well, one of the things that we do as community is think of community as being us normal people. And those other people, whether they're the drug people, the criminal people, the old people, the young people, the homeless people, whatever other people there are out there, they're kind of on the fringe of our community at best, and we need to fix this. And we usually try to use a hammer to fix that particular problem. But that's not really, I don't think, the right approach to it. Because they are our community. They are part of our community. And we all have a responsibility to each other, to everybody in our community. And if we took that attitude, if we actually made that part of our story, then most of those problems would become a lot smaller. That's what the research says. And that's personal experience.
I think that sounds right. I'm sure that that's right. I'm just wondering how many. So this feels like a complicated, multi-tangented thought. I can't say that word. I wonder how many of the competing ideas exist in the heads of those fringe people that it's owed to me. I deserve it. Someone needs to take care of me. Pretty much anything that is deferring responsibility and accountability. I think that's one of the big problems you alluded to earlier on in certainly in this country, maybe it's a human problem all the way around. I don't know. And that seems changing the story from entitlement to accountability.
Absolutely.
Really hard to do. And how do you convince somebody that? Well, this might be the wrong.
So, I don't know. So if this is our community, it's like our home, right? We have a responsibility for our home. You know, you take, if there's something broken on your house,
fix it.
You get it fixed. You get out your hammer and screwdriver, or you call somebody in, whatever, but you get it fixed, right? You take responsibility for it and do something about it. Well, community is our home too, and everybody has a responsibility to take care of the home. Somewhere along the road, we lost that. We lost that sense of responsibility. One of the phrases that I'm hearing commonly these days is that we're no longer citizens. We're consumers. We consume government services and we consume business services. And we don't have any responsibility because we're no longer citizens. Our only responsibility is to follow the rules and spend lots of money so that we can grow the economy. That's it, right? Well, if that's our story, if that's what we believe, that it's none of my business, that, you know, somebody else ought to take care of those drug addicts over there, then, well, we get what we got.
Right. A friend of mine who's been on the show a couple of times, his name is John Moody, has been talking a lot about one half, well, both of these problems, and you identified half as consumptive. We have a culture of consumption, not a culture of production. And if you change that dynamic to being starting with the household, a household of production, not a household of consumption, then those are going to say, well, wait a minute, you have to eat stuff. Yeah, it's not. Yes, that's true. If you grow your garden, you have to consume the things you grow. You have to consume the things you make. And it's not to say don't go buy shoes, but it is to say don't produce nothing. Don't invest. What it does mean, instead of going with the negative, go with the positive. It means invest time and effort and labor into your household, into the people on your block, clean up the empty lots, but just produce something. It can be an aesthetic value. There's aesthetic value is highly important.
It is.
Matters a lot to the psyche. And then I don't know if one's more important than another, but they all sort of seem to work together, building a positivity.
Yeah. So the things that they do, but to change that mindset is hard. Mm-hmm. It's easy, but it's hard. And the reason it's hard is because universally in our countries, both Canada and the United States, we have this thing where it's not really my responsibility. It's up to the government to change those things. I wish they should do something about this. I think it's one of our favorite phrases up here in Canada.
Someone should do something.
That they're talking about is the government. But we have. I'm going to shift the flavor here just a little bit, if I can, Dan. We have in each of our communities a whole troop of volunteers, people doing good, community development professionals, who are all trying very hard to make our world a better place, our communities a better place to live. They're the ones that are on the front lines with the drug addicts and the criminals and the homeless people and all that sort of stuff. So there's a couple of thoughts I'd like to leave. One is that's mostly a thankless job. It's grossly underappreciated by the rest of us. And it's hard work that they're doing. They're doing it incredibly passionately, and they're doing it, and it's really important work. And so one of the things that we can do at the very minimum as a citizen is go out and say thank you to one of those people. I'm really glad you're doing this for us. That's the very least that we could do. But I also have a message to those people who are community helpers, community developers, people who are working to make communities better, more well-being, that their work does not have to be alone. One of the things that I discovered, I had started something called Coffee Connections and invited community developers, community helpers from around the world to get on these conversations. And the reason they were getting on there, for the most part, was they were looking to connect with other ones like themselves, share ideas, and find ways of finding new innovative ways of solving the problems they're working on. And that's why I created Happy Community Builders, is so that they could find each other and do that. So the message that I would want to have for citizenry is, at the very least you can do as a responsible citizen, if you consider yourself citizen at all, is go out and be grateful to the people who are doing the work. Say thank you to them. And to those people who are doing the work, there's places you can reach out, and Happy Community Builders is one of them, where you can connect and find other ideas from other people. One of the things I'm most proud about with Happy Community Builders, we've only started it 3 months ago, there have been two groups that have formed. People have found each other from across North America, in that case, with a common idea of solving a problem. So the first group that came together had the idea of solving isolation as a problem. There are widows who very rarely have any social contact with people. There are people who are on disabilities that have a hard time and are isolated. There's people who may have lost their job and are now hanging inside the house because it's just too awkward to go outside and hear the question, how's it going, or what kind of work are you in, that sort of stuff. So they've put their heads together and come up with a really creative, simple idea on how to get these people out into the community. And they're now taking these ideas and spreading them across other communities. So that's one of the things that, you know, these community developers can do, is find support for each other. That collectively they know a lot. Individually they know quite a bit.
Right. Well, after, right? I haven't been paying attention to what's going on in Canada too much, but with the lockdowns in our two respective countries of the last 2 years and yep. the imminent, it's always that, well, we could do it again. We could do it again.
Yeah.
That's the sense of isolation and all of the, and we know what the negatives are that come with that. And that's very, very useful and necessary service. So good for them for doing that.
Yeah.
This is, I'm going to just ask you, I don't actually even know what the answer is going to be, but I'm curious. Would you consider yourself or your organization anarchist?
No, I don't think so.
Well, and it's okay. The puzzle book makes sense. A lot of people don't know what it means.
I've never thought of myself as an anarchist.
Okay. A lot of people confuse anarchy and chaos, and they're not the same thing. They're the opposites. Anarchy is rules, just not rulers. Chaos is just whatever.
My understanding of an anarchist is a disruptor to the existing rules. Is that fair?
Yeah, there are people sense, who listen to this who will correct me, and I think in the
in the
broad strokes, I think that that's not the case.
Okay,
that doesn't.
I've never thought of myself as an anarchist, so I don't really know.
It's a good question, and it's maybe one that I should find somebody. I know people who could answer that with more clarity and subtlety than I can.
Sure.
I don't think the broad strokes anarchy is going to be that, and that's okay. And I'll have to figure out how to fix this problem. But I was curious because it sounds like the ideas you have, the solutions you have, the opportunities you're presenting are individual based. That doesn't make it anarchist. But it's within a set of rules that isn't necessarily with the blessing of the overlords. And so it starts to look like it could be anarchist just on that alone.
That, yeah. So if there are any rule makers out there, lawmakers out there listening to your podcast, I've challenged the other lawmakers with this question. You guys make lots and lots and lots and lots of rules, and all those rules say what I cannot do. I can't this and I can't that. When's the last time you ever made a rule that says I can do? And for example, I'll give you an example of a really silly incident that happened here in Nova Scotia, Canada. We have a pothole season. It's every spring.
That sounds like great.
And potholes are, especially on gravel roads, are big holes that form where it's hard on your car. And there's one road that was getting to be darn near impossible to drive on. It was nearly impassable, and the citizens had reached out to the local government, say, fix our road, and nothing happened. So one enterprising young guy got a shovel and went out on the road and said, I'll fix this, and he started shoveling in potholes. It turned out to be a good business idea because people who were driving down the road said, hey, good Johnny, what great doing that, here's $5 or $10. Thank you for doing this for us, right? So that encouraged Johnny to fill in more potholes. But the police came and said, you can't do this. And it's illegal for you to do this. Get out of here. So Johnny left, and he came back two more times after that. And on the third time, the police said, if you do this again, I'm going to have to arrest you. Go home. Don't do this. That's a silly, silly, silly rule. Whatever that rule is, there's a good meaning citizen trying to keep his other neighbors safe and their cars working well by fixing something the government wasn't fixing.
Right. And you're all paying to have it not fixed.
Right. Right. So he's using his own initiative, and it's somehow or another illegal to do that.
Yes.
I've got an even worse example of that in Calgary, which is just north of where you are. It's in southern Alberta, which is just north of Montana. They have back alleys in their in their neighborhoods. So they have a front street and then a back alley. And in the back alley, a lot of people park their car. You know, they make their garage off the back alley rather than out front. Mm-hmm. And that's where the garbage is as well. And there was a heavy snowfall, and this back alley wasn't getting cleared. So there was somebody in the neighborhood who happened to be in the construction business who had a great big huge snowplow. So he just took matters into his own hand and plowed out the back alley. The city of Calgary actually called him up and said, "Put the snow back. You're not allowed to do that."
So what did he didn't do it.
No, I don't know if he did or didn't, but that's how ridiculous some of these things get, right? And so I've been challenging. You in the United States particularly are in a legal, we sue people for almost anything in your country.
Right.
Here in Canada, it's starting to spill over here, and unfortunately, we're starting to adopt the same sort of thing. I've asked our lawmakers to make a law that is, if my intention is to do something good for a neighbor, and something goes wrong, like fix their sidewalk in some way or another, and somebody trips over it anyway, even though it's better than it used to be, I'm immune from being sued because my intentions were to do good. My intentions were to do bad if I was deliberately, making spikes in the sidewalk or something like that. Well, that's a different story. But if my intention is to do good, why does the laws not support me for doing good? Why do they go against me for doing good?
Good question. Did you get a good answer?
No. We don't make those kind of laws. Best that I got.
Really?
We don't. Yeah. But the only answers that I've been able to get is no. We don't do that. We just make laws about what you can't do. So in that sense, I guess I'm an anarchist.
All right. Well, I wasn't pushing you to it, but I was just... there are a variety of ideas coming to the fore in the last couple of years. One of them is called seasteading, which is the deliberate development of a community on water. And it's a really interesting idea. More and more, there are people who are working toward to building something kind of like he called a covenant community, where, and so like this community, even 15,000 people in Nova Scotia, or Windsor,
yeah.
You know, it's possible. It's possible that in a particular community, somebody just doesn't fit. That's okay. It's unrealistic to think that every community is for everyone. So
absolutely,
the solution for that person is to go find the community that does fit, and that's fine. That makes perfect sense. People do that all the time. They just may not really have put a fine point on it. It sounds kind of like, to some degree, without maybe being deliberate about it, that's kind of what these communities are doing. They're building a community that they want with a culture that reflects certainly most of the people who have built the community. And I think that's as voluntary as it gets. And you can volunteer to be there. You can volunteer to leave to find something that suits you. And that's fine. That's just how it should be.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. It's, going back to my earlier story, in the ancient times when we lived in caves or sat around the campfire, we really depended upon each other. And it was possible to go out on your own, but your goal, if you went out on your own, was to go find another community that would accept you. Because if you weren't accepted in your own community, your chances of survival out there on your own were pretty low.
Yeah, pretty low. I've seen the documentary, The Croods. I know how that happens.
and so, in many ways, we've been proving through COVID that that's still true.
Right.
If we don't have strong community around us, we, at the very least, will experience mental harm. Mental illness has gone way up and has become a really big issue that we've learned through COVID that isolation exasperates hugely. And so we need community. But somehow or another, we've lost our sense of what community really means. the word commune in community is about togetherness and sharing and things like that. It's not, I got my stuff, you get your own stuff, get out of here. It's not, it's about reaching out across to each other to support each other. That's what community is supposed to be about. And somewhere along the road, we lost that in this story of all that matters is self-reliance, make enough money, and you won't have to depend on anybody else. You'll be able to take care of all your own problems until you find out that that doesn't really work.
Well, first of all, I think for the listener who might be getting frustrated, I don't think we're talking about making a utopia where nothing bad ever happens ever and everybody gets along all the time.
No, absolutely not.
Fantasy. I don't think such a place exists. I think they get more than two humans in a room, you're going to have a difference of opinion.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's not about kumbaya and everything's wonderful. In order to take this responsibility and use it, there's going to be disagreement with somebody else as to whether you're being responsible and doing it the right way or not. That's just part of the process. But a community can work through that to accept the other person's intentions and accept them as an individual, whether you agree with what they say or do anyway. So, you know, this is a sort of a personal bugaboo of mine is the conformist culture that we have, that there's only one right way to be, that we can't allow for eccentricity anymore. Right? Those weird people are somehow or another bad people. That is a sad, sad thing that I think that we've been on a path on homogenizing ourselves down to there's only one really good kind of person out there. And so communities ought to be made up of differences. The more different that we are and still can come together, the more resilient we are, the more when stuff happens, we have more things to draw upon to actually figure out a way out of this. So when the local industry packs up and move, if we're all same thinking, we're kind of stuck. But if we all come from different backgrounds, and different experiences, and different educations, different whatever, all of our differences come together, we can probably find a way out of this.
Yeah, I think I like the eccentric is kind of like the seasoning on the society. You need a little bit of spice.
Exactly.
Sometimes too much spice can be too much. So.
Yeah, well, that's true. But
some people don't like cilantro. Yuck. But, yeah, what are you going to do?
Yeah. So using that metaphor of cooking, one of the things that we're doing with the Happy Community Builders is building a community of community builders, community developers, community helpers, and inviting them all to come in with their spice and vegetables and throw it in the pot and stir it up and see if we can't come up with better ways of actually doing things. And it's working. Their creativity is working.
That's excellent.
It's really exciting to be part of that.
Let's take a moment out for a word from Jake about his Tasting Anarchy podcast.
Hey everyone, Jake here, host of the Tasting Anarchy podcast. Join my co-host Mason and I each week as we explore the world of wine and alcohol through a Liberty lens. You can find us on all your major podcatchers, tastinganarchy.com or Tasting Anarchy on Twitter. Tasting Anarchy, your wine and liberty podcast. Find out how much government is in your drink.
Very good. Well, so now we're on food. I'm going to move into a slightly different part of the show, which is kind of food. it's been called the lightning round, but it doesn't have to be a single one answer question.
Okay.
Of the five flavors, sweet, sour, salty, bitter, or umami, which one's your favorite?
Somewhere between, well, sweet and salty together, I think.
Good combination. What's your favorite food?
Oh, man. One of the things that I like cooking here. And one of the things that I do is generally once a week, pick an idea from some other country and give it a go. So I'm not sure I have a favorite food. I like food, and I like variety in my food.
Okay. What's your least favorite food?
Least favorite food. Well, I had bees once in Vietnam, and
buzz bees. And,
yeah. Huh. And they were just crunchy and tasteless, so I didn't find that to be too inspiring food.
That's a new one to me. What sound do you love?
We've all heard "Amazing Grace." Mm-hmm. "Amazing Grace" sung in Cree is just out of this world. I love it.
What sound do you hate?
I'm a biker. I bicycle. And it seems that there are some people who are compelled as they're driving by to honk their horn at me. I never have nice words to say to them.
I would imagine not. What gets you excited?
I mentioned it a few minutes ago, when people get together and find a creative new solution to something, when they put their imaginations and their openness and their creativity together and come up with a brand new way of doing something much more elegantly, which means simply and complex and simple at the same time, that causes some different outcome. That's always exciting to me.
I have to agree with that. What turns you off?
Turns me off. Putin at the moment.
What's your favorite food indulgence?
Chocolate. Have chocolate every day.
So we did mention Happy Builders, but is there, are you on social media? How can people follow you?
Yes, we're on Facebook, Happy Community Project Facebook. I'm on LinkedIn, Barry Braun, spelled like the razor, Braun, on LinkedIn. But I'd really like to make a special invite to all those people who are community helpers to check out happycommunitybuilders.com. Happycommunitybuilders.com. My goal is that the world needs a lot of help right now, and it's the community builders that are doing a lot of the heavy lifting, and that coming together and doing the lifting together, putting their ideas together to come up with better solutions for lifting, all of that stuff. So happycommunitybuilders.com to those people who want to be community helpers, community builders, community developers, any of those sorts of words.
For the person listening, thinking, wow, I really want to be part of this, but I don't build things. Say this person is a trades person, but lays tile or hangs drywall or does roofing, or maybe it's a painter, or maybe it's a gardener, and doesn't really think that that's building, because building is putting down the foundation and the floor plate and then the joist and then the studs. Is this person somebody you need, someone who should be checking out your website because there is a need for those skills and gifts?
Many of them, yes. We have people just recently, for example, there's someone who was a consultant, or is a consultant still, although she's winding down her business. And her special skill is strategic consulting for not-for-profits. And she's volunteering herself to help us figure out how to do a better job of what we're doing. That's perhaps maybe a too specialized skill for someone who's like a bricklayer or a drywaller or something like that. They're problem solvers.
Right.
Every one of them has creative ideas on how to solve. And really what our communities are is a place to creatively problem solve. So there's two things that they can do. One is, at the very least, go out and find somebody who is actually working to make the community better and thank them. That's the very least. But if they want to do more than that, we have a program, and it's under the Happy Community Project banner, where we enable, through coaching and training, ordinary citizens to transform their community story, to remake a new story for their community. What it takes is about a 4-hour commitment for at least a year or 18 months to be able to accomplish that. And we have a program for supporting those people, and they can find us too. They can find me for sure on happycommunitybuilders.com. I don't want to confuse them with too many
right.
addresses and stuff.
Well, I'll put both of those on the show notes page for today, which is culinarylibertarian.com/194. This has been good. I appreciate your time up there in hot Nova Scotia today. It's cold here in Oregon. It's a backwards world.
Yeah. It is. Well, thank you, Dan, for having me on the show. I've enjoyed the insightful questions that you've had.
Appreciate that.
I'm glad that we got to go into a little bit of depth on what we're doing here rather than just staying on the surface.
Very
so thank
good.
You
well, me
for
too.
That.
You're welcome. Thanks again for your time. I appreciate it, and I'll be talking to you soon.
Good, Dan. Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, folks, that's going to do it. Happy Community Builders page will be linked on the show notes page, which is culinarylibertarian.com/194. Father's Day is not too far off. Get Dad an 8-pack of spices for the grill, and he'll be thrilled. Take my word on it. Spice mixes range from California Citrus Rub, which is citrusy with a bit of heat, to the Pearl Street Plank Salmon Rub, which is sweet and smoky and spicy, or the Pike's Peak Butcher's Rub, which is a mix I use and is excellent on steak or pork chops, either in the smoker or on the grill. Use my affiliate link to culinarylibertarian.com/dadsday to get this deal from Savory Spice. Thank you for listening. I appreciate you being here. Thanks also to my Patreon supporters. I've added a short audio segment from my talk with Barry to the supporters section on the Patreon. I'm looking to make this kind of thing a regular edition with guests. I'm thinking of calling it The Chef's Table, and the topic will be food somehow, either specific to their knowledge or something about, like in the case of Barry, something about their family, what they do. It's fun to hear. It's fun to learn about that. And I think it's a good way to get to really know the person. You can become a Patreon supporter at culinarylibertarian.com/support. Have a great week, and I'll see you soon.
Music
for the Culinary Libertarian Podcast is provided by Matthew Bankert at mattbankert.com.